I want to begin by telling you an experience I had a long time ago. I guess I was about 12 or 13. It hasn't been repeated since then. It lasted, I would say it lasted 15 minutes the most. I was at my mother's home, lying on the couch. It was a beautiful day, just like today, when the leaves on the tree are this lime green. You know, later they turn dark green. The wind was sort of shifting the leaves back and forth, and of course the backdrop of that was that beautiful blue sky. And I was lying there, and something I have never felt, and it lasted 10 minutes. Such a feeling of awe, respect, happiness, joy, contentment, at just a sense of gratitude for being alive, and a feeling of how great God is in His creation. It was the happiest 10 minutes of my life. And I have never experienced anything like that again since that time. Not to that extent. Now, someone said that, I remember I heard a minister say that he called it glimpses of eternity. Glimpses of eternity. That maybe what is allowed is what it would be like, you know, once all is said and done and you are in the government, the kingdom of God. Glimpses of eternity. If you've ever had anything like that, I want you to talk to me after services, because I'd like to hear your story. Surely I'm not the only one. But I would love to repeat that. And I wasn't praying for it. I wasn't trying to, I wasn't, you know, at age 12 or 13, you know, it just, all of a sudden, it came. But I got to thinking about it, that it's really not possible to enjoy, to have that kind of happiness while sin is still in the world. Because even if God would grant you that ability to enjoy life to the full, you really couldn't use it every day, knowing that there are people being murdered, knowing that there are people being killed, knowing that there are dysfunctional family systems, knowing that, there's no way you could be just happy all the time while sin is in the world. That's one of the things that brings us down so much, that we know other people are hurting and suffering. What I'd like to talk about is one of the things that keep us from enjoying life to the full. And believe it or not, it has a lot to do with the friends that you choose. You know, friends can be a great upper, or they can be a downer, and there is no middle ground. You either have friends or you have enemies. And don't kid yourself in thinking, oh, I've got something in between. No, you don't. You got friends, you got enemies. The friends that you associate with. You know, you can't do anything about the evil that is in the world, but you can do something about the friends you associate. You know, you can choose to allow people, the people that you choose to lift you up, build you up, or you can choose something quite different where you're brought down. And you can go through a miserable, wretched existence. And it has a lot to do with the people you are coming in contact with, the people that you are associating with. And that's a choice. That's a choice that you make. If you were to do an evaluation of why you so often feel down in the dumps, depressed, angry, your morale is down, you're feeling sorry either for yourself or for somebody else. If you were to ask, okay, why is that? It has a lot to do with the kind of dysfunctional relationship that you're involved in that causes you to get down and feel bad and depressed. And, you know, it has a lot to do with your relationships and friendships. There was a song by ELO. Now, if you're not into rock music, you don't know what I'm talking about. That's Electric Light Orchestra. And the song was, "Don't Bring Me Down." Oh, I love that song. Don't bring me down. Friendships. Who are your friends? Now, in school, I had friends that I thought I would be like this forever. And today, I don't know where they're at, and I don't give a flip where they're at. I just don't care. I don't go to reunions because I don't, you know. Yeah, that's right. reunions, what do you call those? School reunions. Yeah. I don't go to many family reunions, to be honest with you. But you know, a lot of these people, I don't know what happened to them. But guess who is my best personal closest friend on earth? My wife, Teresa. Yeah, we have a wonderful relationship. As a teenager, actually, I had a lot of friends. I know this is hard to believe for some of you. That is, I had a lot of friends as long as I was buying. Because I had, as a teenager, I had something. I had money. The reason I had money, because I worked all the time. And I had a decent paying job. So I had nice cars and money. And as long as I was paying the fuel and paying for the food and paying for the beer, I had plenty of friends. And I remember one guy that, you know, he never had any money. I always had to provide everything. And all of a sudden, he starts buying me everything. He says, "Yeah, I'll pay for that. Let me pay for your food. Here's $10 to go in your car." And I thought, what's going on? This is not like this guy. He never pays for anything. Well, what I'm leaving out is at the same time he was working with us, and he was working in the warehouse filling, making our rock. And there's 60 molds, and they're about 20 stack high, 20 molds. And what you do is you fill each one of these individual cavities with cement. And then in the morning, when it's dry, you pop out all those stones. You pop out the top one, you set it aside, you pop out the next one, you go all the way down to those rows of 20, each 20 molds, and you take out the rock. And of course, he was getting paid by each mold, how many he filled. Well, come to find out, he was working for me or us, and he was just, he would go in there and mix a little bit of mud and just fill the top molds and turn it in as he filled all 60. So, you know, I finally figured out how he was able to provide, you know. But friends have never left a positive influence on me, by the way. You know, I mean, you know, today I have few friends. And I am very selective as to who I choose to have as a friend. One, I'm not, a lot of people need a lot of friends. Nancy there. they like to be around a lot. I don't need a lot of friends. You know, I really do not. But some people need more than others, and it's nothing wrong with that. I mean, good gracious, if everybody was like me, what kind of a world would it be like? Yeah. Now think about this. God, and Janie mentions this, God is our very best friend. His friendship is a role model for all other friendships. You ever thought about that? I mean, if you're choosing friends, you're going to judge that friendship by the role model, God. That's how you're going to make your choices. Boy, that's something else. How selective are we when it comes to choosing our friends? Do we use God as our role model when choosing our friends? You know, a lot of times our selection is based on raw emotions. You know, often we are so needy ourselves and so maybe emotionally deprived that if we can find one person that will smile at us or you know, or just say hello, we got a friend for life. Well, she smiled at me. I got a friend for life, you know. And then when you think about the family system, if you grew up emotionally deprived, if you grew up where no one would listen to you, if you grew up a black sheep of the family, or if you were always put down, then your ability to choose friends is going to be somewhat corrupted. and tainted. But do we use God as our role model when choosing our friends? Then you have what I call the users. The user will choose friends based on what can this person do for me. His friends are just stepping stones to get where he wants to go. And you know, sometimes you find out, oh no, you know, I've had this relationship going on and I just realized this person was just using me to get what he wanted. Often in male-female relationships, you have that. You have the guy who is using the girl to get what he wants. Sexual fulfillment. It's not about relationships, not about love, it's not about any of those things. And so it's a big letdown. Sometimes we get coerced into friendships. And when you get coerced into anything, it's never good, especially friendships. You know, there's a law of natural attraction that you all have. Everyone in, you, in this room, you have a natural attraction about you that will draw people to you, whether you like them or not. But they'll be drawn to you. And the law of natural attraction involves physical appearance, the way the skin is stretched across the face. Nothing you can do about that. You know, I heard the stories about President Kennedy, and I heard, Kennedy and Clinton, that a lot of women voted for them because they liked the way he looked. Just a nice-looking guy, you know, and I'm going to vote for him. I don't know what he stands for, but he looks good, you know. So you see, these relationships are very superficial. Friendships, people that are drawn to you, people that come to you and say, yeah, I like you. Charisma, you can have a magnetic personality. You can be the, you know, everybody just loves being, and so people are drawn to you. Money is power. You got money, you know, people, because as a teen, you know, people were drawn to me because I had some money. Success, you know, people can be drawn to that. So in a lot of these friendships, you know, it's simply about, they're not really nothing that builds a good friendship. It's just that you have people that are drawn to you. I've been coerced into friendships and, you know, I didn't even like the person. How do you know when you've been coerced into a friendship? Here's the answer. You will have absolutely nothing in common. Nothing. You'll think, why does this person, you know, why is it? Here's this person again. We have nothing in common. That's when you know you've been coerced into a friendship. But do we use God as our role model when choosing our friends? Now I want to go through some guidelines for choosing friends. And this is also good for choosing a mate if you're thinking about getting married. Anybody thinking about getting married? Sandy, something? But before we get into this, you're going to have to jump to this one loop. If you cannot jump to this loop, your selection of friends will always be tainted. And it's in this Bible. It's 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 33. 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 33. If we're going to even go down the road of picking and choosing friends, we have to get through this one loop. 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 33. Be not deceived. Evil communication corrupts good manners. Okay, that's the King James. Let me read it to you from a different translation. I think this is God's Word translation. It says this, don't let anyone deceive you. Associating with bad people will ruin decent people. Yeah. Associating with bad people will ruin decent people. You see, if you can't get to, it doesn't matter what you think. It doesn't matter how strong you are. It doesn't matter what, you know, this is fact right here. You associate with bad people and it will ruin you. It ruins decent people. Now, with me, I have to really watch out for this because we are all highly impressionable, whether we want to admit that or not. I am obsessively impressionable. I can't watch TV. I watch one movie and I'm watching it for 6 months trying to figure out every nuance. Why did that person say that? Why did they do this? Where did they go? Where? And I will get it figured out. But I think it's 6 months of my time trying to figure that. So I have to be very selective about how TV, you know, any television, and in friendships, how a person, the impression they have on you, I have to be very, very selective of that. So we have to admit, I am highly impressionable, and associating with bad people ruins decent people. No matter how close to God you think you are, you're not above the influence of bad people. bad people will bring you down. If I were to interview your friends, what would I find? Would I find a bunch of misfits from the Jerry Springer show? Yeah. I'd like you to meet my husband. He just got out of jail. I'd like you to meet my wife. She just tried to kill herself 5 times last year. But she's a Sunday school teacher, by the way. Did you hear about the woman, that the Sunday school teacher, that she was caught stealing on her record that went back just to like a year before? That she'd been caught, I think, stealing. That was on her record, the woman that that killed the 8-year-old girl in the church. And, you know, I think, why didn't the church check it? Why don't you check out criminal records? Especially if you're going to work for a church. Sunday school teacher. And she already had a record, and no one, let's look at Proverbs 9 and verse 6. Proverbs 9 and verse 6. And we'll go through several scriptures in Proverbs. Proverbs 9 and verse 6. Forsake the foolish and live, and go in the way of understanding. Notice, forsake the foolish. Don't hang out with. Don't make him your business partner. Don't marry the idiot. Forsake the foolish. Forsake the foolish. And that sort of sounds non-Christian right there. Well, you're forsaking me. I mean, what would a Christian do? But Christians are supposed to love everybody. Now, this is forsake the foolish. Proverbs 14 and verse 7. Proverbs 14 and verse 7. Go from the presence of a foolish man when you perceive not in him the lips of knowledge. Go! Now, I don't know. As human beings, it doesn't take much to impress us when it comes to being influenced by others. I am amazed at some of the things that, you know, it's like, well, you know, this guy, he can work the Rubik's Cube in 10 seconds. He's a good friend, you know. Man, he's talented there. He's my friend. Or he said he was a Christian. He's a good friend. Or he can quote the Athanasian Creed, you know. He can quote the Bible backwards. Good friend. He's a genius. You know, the issue is morality. The issue is morality. What does this person stand for? And don't kid yourself in thinking you don't know. Don't kid yourself in thinking you don't know. You do know. You just don't want to face it. And it's almost as if the worse the friend is, the more they can make you feel indebted to them. You ever notice that? It's like, you know, I just can't get away from this person. I don't like it, the person. We have nothing in common. It's almost the worse the enemy is, the more evil is involved, the more they can hold an indebted, I can't let go of this person. That's a strange thing. But you got to realize when people are having power over you. Proverbs 22 and verse 25. Proverbs 22 and verse 25. Make no friendship with an angry man, and with a furious man you shall not go, lest you learn his ways and get a snare to your soul. You know, this is powerful scripture here. Make no friendship with an angry man. It will rub off on you. 1 Corinthians 5 and verse 11. 1 Corinthians 5 and verse 11 says this. It says, but now I have written unto you not to keep company. If any man that is called a brother, notice this, this is 1 Corinthians 5 and verse 11. If any man that is called a brother, now I don't know if he's calling himself a brother, you know, I'm your brother, man, I'm your friend, me and you, you know, we're friends. If any man is called a brother, be a fornicator, covetous, idolater, a railer, or a drunkard, or an extortioner. You know what that is? An extortioner. That's a person that uses others for personal gain. It's a person that uses others for personal gain, money and things like that. It says, with such a one, know not to eat. What does it say that you shun the person? You shun the person. You've got enemies and you've got friends. There's no middle ground. No middle ground. Do you think it was easy for God to shun Lucifer? You know, here is this beautiful created being. An angel. And they had to develop a friendship. I don't know how long that friendship developed, you know, in the Garden of Eden and creation, but it was a friendship there. And Satan rebelled, and God didn't say, "Oh, hey, stick around, I'll still be your friend." He was cast out, and he became an enemy of God. As we near the end time, we're going to be called to make some hard decisions. We're going to be called to reevaluate our friendship and make a distinction between friends and enemies, and no middle ground. Now, a real friend is a person that you can truly help. A real friend is a person that you truly can help. Now, let me explain. As people who take the name of Christ, you don't want to spend endless hours trying to help a person that cannot be helped. I mean, you hope that, okay, I'm going to help this person. I hope I get something out of this. So how do you know when you can help a person or you can't help a person? How do you know when this person is really a friend or not a friend? Let's look at Galatians 6 and verse 1, because the Bible gives us the answer. Galatians 6 and verse 1, and we'll read 6, 1 through 8. It says, "Brethren, if a man be overtaken in a fault, you which are spiritual, restore such a one in the meekness, in the spirit of meekness, considering yourself, lest you also be tempted. Bear ye one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ." Aha! You see, it says we ought to go around bearing one another's burden. So every person that comes my way, no matter what the sin is, I'm just supposed to take them in and bear their burden. Right? Wrong. Let's continue on. "For if a man thinks himself to be something when he is nothing, he deceives himself. But let every man prove his own work, and then you shall rejoicing in himself alone and not in another." Verse 5, "For every man shall bear his own burden." Uh-oh. Now we've got a contradiction here. One, we've got in verse 2, "Bear ye one another's burdens." And now in verse 5, we've got, "For every man shall bear his own burden." How do you know the difference? How do you know the difference when whether I can help this person bear his burden or I'm going to have to let him bear his own burden? How do you know the difference? Well, let's continue on. "Let him that is taught in the word communicate unto him that teacheth in all good things. Be not deceived. God is not mocked. For whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. For he that soweth to his flesh shall reap corruption. And he that sows to the Spirit shall the Spirit reap everlasting life." What we're dealing with here is two distinct classes of people. There are those who admit their mistakes and those who do not. In other words, this first group right here, brethren, in verse 1, if a man be overtaken in a fault. Now, how do you know he's overtaken in a fault? Well, he tells you. He comes up and he says, "You know, I've got a problem. I need help. I've done this. I've committed this sin. And I'm asking for..." In other words, he confesses to you his wrong. Now, you can help that. You're supposed to bear that person's burden, because he's, in his honesty, he's admitting he's wrong and has made a mistake. Bear ye one another's burdens. But the other person simply has to bear his own burden by reaping what he sows. He's not willing to admit he's got any problems. He's not willing to admit that he's made a mistake. He's not willing to say, "Hey, I have screwed up and this is what I've done that's wrong." He's not willing to admit that. What do? You let him bear his own burden by reaping what he sows. So you got two classes of people, those who will admit their mistakes and those who will not. Friends of character who have made mistakes and those who will not, they cannot. They don't even have the ability to come to you and say, "Hey, let me tell you what I've done wrong." They can't do it. And you're going around bearing their burden. You're on the wrong side of God. You need to get on God's right side. And it's a very good thing to do, to ask this person, is this person willing to admit what he's done that's wrong? You can help that person. You can help that person. And it's amazing. You know, we've had people call our church asking for help. A lot of times they call for financial help. I have never heard one of them say, "You know, the reason I am broke is because I charge all my credit cards up." One woman called and said, you know, I've got three children by three different men, and they won't pay my child support. She didn't say, you know, I played the whore, got myself pregnant. I got three children that's not mine. They don't say that. They say it's the government. He's not paying child support. When they confess their fault, you can help them. Not willing to confess the fault, not a lot you can do. You can bear their burden if you like. Well, it depends on which side of God you want to be on. My mother once said, she said, this is the hardest lesson I ever tried to learn, or it was toughest lesson. She said, I used to think that if you could just show a person a better way, that they would say, oh yeah, that's it, I'll do it. He said, the toughest lesson was you could show them a better way and they turn around and spit in your face. Said, I had the hardest time accepting that about people. I think Christ sometimes will say, what in the world did you think you were doing? What did you think you were doing? Okay, James 4 and verse 4 in closing. James 4 and verse 4. James 4 and verse 4. Ye adulterers and adulteresses, know ye not that the friendship of the world is an enmity with God? Whosoever there will be a friend of the world is the enemy of God. That's pretty powerful. That's powerful. A friend of the world is an enemy of God. You know, the very fact that we befriend an evil person gives that person a sense of justification. Hey, I may be doing this thing that's wrong, but hey, I got friends. I got all kinds of friends, you know. God did not say to Satan, hey, look, I disagree with what you did, but I'll still be your friend. He didn't say that. He was cast out. He became an enemy of God. Think about this. Evil would die out without friendship. Evil in people would die out without friendship. Evil is always justified as long as he has friends. And if you think about every sin, every hang-up that you've gotten yourself into, chances are you were introduced to it by a so-called friend. So it's important who your friends are. It's important. You ever heard the expression, misery loves company? What gives evil power? What gives evil power is friendship. Your friendship.